welcome to Skagit Talks. Interviews with interesting people from Skagit Valley College, as well as folks from around the Skagit Valley. Now, Skagit Talks. Welcome to Skagit Talks. In the first half of our program, KSVR presents the Skagit Valley news from around the Skagit Valley, as reported by Joanna Bruno. The second half of Skagit Talks will be our interview from the community and Skagit Valley College. Now, KSVR, Skagit Valley's community radio, presents the news.
A new analysis of research on what federal energy efficiency standards would cost families state by state and how much they would save on utility bills shows the net gain would be about $330 for the typical Washington household. Conservation groups backing new federal energy efficiency standards have been saying for months that they would save money for households in Washington and across the country. Those who oppose the legislation say it would cost consumers more. As it turns out, both are right, according to new research from the Consumer Federation of America. Report author Mark Cooper crunched the numbers, weighing the costs of energy-saving appliances and better insulation against the price of electricity, and found bottom-line savings. He says the most money is saved if a household can manage a 30% increase in energy efficiency.
Now, it's not free. You have to spend money to make money. On net, however, they'll end up at the end of the year with $300 more in their pocket.
Cooper says natural gas savings for Washington households using the same equation would be almost $70. He notes that his numbers are based on assessments from federal research and organizations that are not lobbying either for or against energy legislation. Report author Mark Cooper explains that efficiency is simply a profitable investment.
The cost of getting more efficiency in the building, more insulation, higher efficiency appliances, and so forth, is less than the cost of consuming the energy.
Explore the 1909 Alaska Yukon Pacific Exposition, the grand event that brought Seattle into the national spotlight, on Sunday, March 14th at 2 p.m. at the Skagit County Historical Museum. Historians Alan J. Stein and Paula Becker, yes, you've seen them on PBS, will share amazing photos and fascinating stories from their book, The Alaska-Yukon Pacific Exposition, Washington's First World's Fair. Learn about the history and the wonders of the fair, ranging from native peoples from the far ends of the earth to the most modern of 20th century inventions, all featured in elaborate buildings constructed on the University of Washington campus. This presentation is provided in conjunction with the featured exhibit, The Way We Played, Early Skagit Recreation, and is included with admission to the museum. The Skagit County Historical Museum is located at the top of the hill in Laconia. The museum hours are Tuesday through Sunday, 11 to 5 p.m. For more information, call 360-466-3365 or visit skagitcounty.net/museum. The Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission will accept public comments on proposed changes to this year's hunting regulations and special hunt permit drawings during a meeting in Olympia on March 12th and 13th. The commission, which sets policy for the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, also will consider initial comments on proposed new rules designed to address property damage and other public concerns related to wildlife. The public meeting will start at 8:30 p.m. on both days. An agenda for the meeting, along with the wildlife proposals on these issues, is available on the Commission's website. The new hunting rules proposed for the upcoming season reflect changes in state game populations since the current three-year hunting plan was adopted last year, said Dave Ware, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife game manager. The proposed hunting rules include a combination of new conservation measures and hunting opportunities for species such as deer, elk, moose, bighorn sheep, mountain goats, black bear, cougar, and small game. In addition, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife is proposing changes in the way random drawings are conducted for special hunt permits, which provide additional hunting options beyond those authorized by a general hunting license. Public hearings on special hunt permits and hunting rules proposed by the Fish and Wildlife are scheduled March 13th, the second day of the Commission's meeting in Olympia. The Commission is expected to take action on both proposals at a meeting set April 9th and 10th in Leavenworth. Compact fluorescent light bulbs are the new green lighting alternative, but some folks refuse to use them because of the small mercury content. Now, the Washington State Legislature has passed a bill to create a convenient residential recycling program for compact fluorescent lights and other lights that contain mercury. The bill, ESSB 5543, now awaits only the governor's signature to become law. Compact fluorescent light bulbs, or CFLs, consume only a quarter of the energy incandescent lamps use, last up to 10 times longer, and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. However, each light contains mercury, a potent neurotoxin. Mercury from broken bulbs and tubes in trash cans and solid waste trucks can pose a risk to families and solid waste workers. Currently, as few as 2% of the mercury-containing lights from Washington homes get recycled. This bill gives us a way to safely recycle mercury-containing lights rather than throwing them in the trash, said Northwest Energy Coalition Policy Associate Carrie Dalwick. And the recycling program itself will boost consumers' confidence in using these energy-saving lights, which are an important part of the climate solution. The producer-financed recycling program would begin January 1, 2013. The State Department of Ecology would engage a contractor for the program, and each producer of mercury-containing lights would make an annual payment to fund program costs. Alternately, producers could choose to provide and pay for their own independent recycling programs. Service would have to be provided in every county of the state. Washington Citizens for Resource Conservation Program Director Sue Ellen Melly described the bill as the second in the nation of its type and a big step forward for recycling in Washington state. She also praised the bill's producer pays approach, which is based on the concept of product stewardship, in which paying to recycle the products is just part of the manufacturer's costs of doing business. The producer-financed recycling program will be budget neutral to the state, won't saddle local governments with unfunded mandates, and will not charge residents any fee for bringing in their lights to be recycled. A product stewardship recycling law for computers and TVs passed by the Washington legislature in 2006 has been a tremendous success. In 2009, its first year of operation, the producer-provided program collected more than 38 million pounds of TVs, computers, and monitors, about 2,200 units a day. The program diverted more than 2.6 million pounds of lead from landfills and incinerators. You've heard their ads on the radio. Now, hear the rest of the story. LifeLock, the identity theft prevention provider whose CEO published his social security number in advertisements, can no longer claim its services protect consumers from all forms of identity theft. The states and Federal Trade Commission picked apart LifeLock's claims and alleged the company couldn't deliver on its promises, Attorney General Rob McKenna said. The recent agreement deadbolts LifeLock's ability to claim its services eliminate the risk of identity theft. A group of 34 state attorneys general joined the Federal Trade Commission recently in announcing an agreement with LifeLock, under which the Tempe, Arizona-based company will pay $11 million in restitution to consumers. Although the FTC and state attorneys general shared jurisdiction to investigate unfair and deceptive practices against consumers, a joint enforcement action of this magnitude is unprecedented. Each year, about 8 million Americans, including 5,000 Washington residents, become victims of identity theft or identity fraud. Given these alarming statistics, attorneys general said consumers are looking for ways to protect themselves and their pocketbooks. The FTC and states began investigating LifeLock amid allegations that the company made a range of deceptive claims that violated consumer protection laws, including leading consumers to believe its $10 per month service fee was a proven solution that would protect against all forms of identity theft. They also claimed the company misrepresented the nature of specific services it provided to protect or alert consumers when their personal information had been compromised. LifeLock's previous advertisements guaranteed to protect consumers' personal information and prevent criminals from opening accounts in their names. Some ads included CEO Todd Davis' Social Security number, which Davis said showed how confident I am in LifeLock's proactive identity theft protection. In 2007, it was reported Davis became the victim of fraud when someone used his published Social Security number to attain a $500 loan. While LifeLock promised consumers complete protection against all types of identity theft, in truth, the protection it actually provided left enough holes that you could drive a truck through it, FTC Chairman John Leibovitz said during a press conference recently. Past marketing materials warned consumers about their heightened risk of identity theft when LifeLock did not have information to warrant such a warning. LifeLock's advertisements also implied that individuals with fraud alerts on their consumer reports will always receive a phone call prior to the opening of new accounts, when in fact a phone call is not required by federal law. Under the agreement, LifeLock is prohibited from misrepresenting that its services protect against all types of identity theft, constantly monitor activity on each of its customers' consumer reports, always prompt a call from a potential creditor before a new account can be opened in the customer's name, and eliminate the risk of identity theft. LifeLock is also prohibited from overstating the risk of identity theft to consumers, including whether a particular consumer has become or is likely to become a victim. LifeLock also agreed to pay $1 million to cover the costs of the state's investigation. Washington's share is $15,000. Attorneys general said there is nothing consumers can do or purchase that will guarantee they won't become identity theft victims, but helpful tools are available. All consumers can obtain a free annual credit report from each of the three major credit reporting agencies, regardless of whether they have been identity theft victims. Consumers can use the reports to review their own credit histories and identify errors and inaccuracies, such as unauthorized accounts. Request a report online at annualcreditreport.com. Consumers themselves are best positioned to monitor their own bank accounts and credit card statements for unauthorized withdrawals or charges. Consumers who suspect they are already identity theft victims or may soon become victims can place a fraud alert on their credit history by contacting one of the three major credit reporting agencies. Another option is to request a security freeze, which means that a consumer's credit file cannot be shared with potential creditors. A security freeze can help prevent identity theft, since most businesses will not open credit accounts without checking a consumer's credit history first. Information about obtaining a credit report, fraud alert, or security freeze is available on the Washington Attorney General's website under Safeguarding Consumers. LifeLock agreed to pay $11 million in restitution to eligible consumers who signed up for services between April 1, 2005 and March 30, 2009. The FTC and states will jointly send letters to eligible consumers notifying them of the agreement and how they can opt in to the settlement. Information about the redress program is available by calling 202-326-3757 or online at ftc.gov/LifeLock. You have been listening to KSVR 91.7 FM, news you'll want to know in Skagit Valley. I'm Joanna Bruno. Thanks for listening. And now, stay tuned for another special Skagit Talks interview.
Welcome to Skagit Talks. I'm Dave McConnell. Today we're going to talk about animals, specifically pets that are abandoned or otherwise unwanted. I've invited Fagan Sanchez, a volunteer with SPOT, to fill us in. Fagan, welcome to Skagit Talks.
Thank you very much.
Start at the beginning. What and why is SPOT?
Well, SPOT back in the fall of 1999 was started by a group of folks that wanted to provide the community and all of our surrounding area with an alternative method of caring for and adopting out companion animals, something other than just the Humane Society.
And SPOT, that must stand for something.
Saving Pets One at a Time.
And you do the alternative to what the Humane Society, is that what you're saying?
We do. What we have are foster homes. And these foster parents take the animals in, help them, socialize them, train them, give them basic skills, and make them a pet that someone would want in their home. And they keep them there until we can find a good home for them.
So you don't have a central facility where I can go and look over the pet supply?
No, we don't.
Okay. How big a staff do you folks work with?
Oh, wow. We probably have a core group that is about 20 people active every meeting and so forth. But we have many, many foster homes throughout the community. Anyone could be a foster parent if they'd like to volunteer.
How do you fund all of this? That's a pretty big staff. How are they paid well? What's going on?
Oh, I wish we were paid. We are all volunteer. Everything is by donation. We are totally nonprofit. So when we're out begging for money, it's going straight to the animals. There's nobody, no human getting any money for what they're doing.
And an office somewhere?
We have not actually had an office until just recently. If folks are familiar with Cascade Valley Veterinary, they have in their lot area a building called Doggy Come Play. And in with Doggy Come Play, we now have official office space.
So someone can come by there and find out more about this if they want?
They sure could.
Okay, so if I have an unwanted pet or a stray shows up on my doorstep, I can bring it to the office?
You could. It would probably be better, though, if you called first, because we're being volunteer. We're not always staffed. And the phone lines are, and they will get you to someone right away, usually one of the board members who's also a foster home, and they can make arrangements to pick the animal up. And
okay, we better have the phone number.
360-336-5388.
That's 336-5388 if a stray animal shows up on your doorstep and you can't take it in yourself. Okay, I've called the number and someone has responded and someone comes and picks it up. I have to take it somewhere or what?
We'll work that out with you, but we pretty much can come and get it if you don't have a way to transport it. Very often, someone that finds an animal doesn't have a carrier, a proper way to restrain it. The animal is frightened. It's upset. It's not going to ride in a car like Fluffy does, who's used to riding in the car with you. So we've got the ways and the means to come get it.
And what's this going to cost me to get rid of this extra cat I've got in my house?
It won't cost you anything if it's a stray or an abandoned pet. But now if you want to volunteer giving up your animal, you can do that, and there is no cost to that either. And that's happening right now more so than ever before because people can't afford to feed their animals or give them the veterinary care they need when the economic times are so bad. So we're actually seeing folks call in and do what we call a surrender. They give us all the information they can about the pet. They give us all the medical records available. And they simply give up ownership. And then it's up to us to try to find that animal another loving home.
How many animals do you have in foster care at this point, more or less?
Gosh, that's something I probably should have asked one of the folks before I came. I would say probably 50 or 60 at this time.
And the number is going up, it sounds like.
It does, yeah.
In these times. And I suppose somebody who's moving out of a home into a condo or something like that, don't have space and this sort of thing also adds to that.
Yeah, and military families, when they leave, they don't take their pets.
Yeah. Hopefully they don't just abandon them.
Some do.
Yep, I know. Yeah, I live out in the country, and there are virtually all the time we see stray cats, particularly occasionally dogs floating around.
That brings to mind another thing. Stray cats. We call them feral cats because they're not the kind of cat you can pick up and love and hold. Very often, people in a certain area become aware of a group of cats living together, which we call a colony. We call it a feral colony. We actually have funds. If those people will work with us, we can take out a cage and humanely catch that animal, take it to the vet, make sure it's healthy, have it spayed or neutered so that we can stop the population growth, and then return it to its colony with a mark on its ear that tells us it's been treated. And then that human that helps us do that can become a colony watcher or caretaker, and we can even help supply food to feed those animals. So we can treat them humanely until their lifeline ends, and yet at the same time, they're healthy, but they can't be a pet to anyone. You can't just let these animals live out there breeding and being unhealthy.
Well, actually, in the area where I live, the coyotes keep the population down. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that happens a lot.
Yes, it probably does.
Yes. If myself or one of my neighbors is interested to get a pet in spite of the economic times, I assume I can do that through Spot as well.
Oh, you bet. Every Saturday and Sunday sometimes at either Petco or PetSmart, we have adoption clinics going. People can come in, take a look at an animal, talk to the foster parent, ask questions about that animal. How good is it? Will it like my cats at home? Does it get along with the other dogs in my house? And we could work with them, and they could choose a pet and adopt.
When and where is this again?
Usually every Saturday and Sunday at Petco and PetSmart.
Here in Skagit Valley.
Yep.
And how many animals, if I come by, am I going to see? You're not going to have the whole 50 or 60 there, I assume.
No. Only at a given time we have maybe 5 or 6 cats and 5 or 6 dogs. Sometimes we have a litter of puppies. It just depends on what's flowing through our arms.
How long do animals kind of typically stay with their foster family? Or is there a typical stay?
Oh, there really isn't. Some little critters come in and go out within 2 months. And other critters, they're there for a long time. They have a lot of baggage. They have a lot of issues. Sometimes we just have to keep them with the foster home and keep working on them. We did the puppy mill seizure, the great big one that everyone heard about last January 21st. And then after that, we've done a couple of other seizures that we've been involved in. Those animals have a whole different set of needs, and they take often longer to find a good home to be in, a permanent home, a forever home, we call it. But they're still adoptable. It just takes time.
What you say they have special needs. What's so special about puppy mill puppies?
Oh, get me started on that one. They have lived most often in all of their lives in metal cages with no bottoms. So that you're thinking a wire cage stacked maybe 5 or 6 tall and hundreds of them in a room. They have never been handled by a human other than meanly or inhumanely. They have not eaten properly. They have had jaw disease, joint disease. If they have been breeding over and over and over, they have lost the calcium in their bones. Several of the little rescues that we did last year, they made it through the rescue process. They made it through the bathing and the grooming and teeth cleaning, and only to fall off a couch and have no calcium in the bone and break the leg so that it had to be amputated. There was no bone to reset. We had a little dog that lost its jaw to dental disease, and it had no lower jaw. Very fortunately, though, someone from Canada just came down and adopted this little guy, and they're willing to give him the special needs home that he requires. But there's a lot of unusual. For instance, I have still a foster dog from that. She's actually my dog now. She's no longer a foster dog. But she, if you just set keys on the counter or silverware, that dog just freaks. She scatters. She runs. She knows me and loves me and wants to sit in my lap, yet if we get outside and something scares her, she runs, and I can't get her to come to me. You have to be very, very consistent and very, very calming and patient with these animals. It's going to take a year, 2 years maybe, to get them really settled in.
So the puppy mills are a problem.
Terrible. Absolutely terrible.
It sounds actually that's a subject for another whole interview, although I'm sure there's a lot more to it. How often do the foster families do, as you apparently have done, taken in a foster animal and then all of a sudden it's my pet?
That's right. It's home. It happens a lot, and that's why we're always asking for more people to step forward and see if they'd be a good foster parent. We have a board member that would come out, would talk to them, would look over their home, talk to them about what it means to be a foster parent, and if it's a good fit, if it'll work, we can use them. But that's why the foster homes get filled up. We have husbands that say, no more pets.
I can imagine that's true. Do you have a website? If one goes to the website, can one see the – are there pictures of animals you have available? I mean, probably ought to say what the website is, too.
You're right. I'm glad you asked. It's spot at savingpetsoneatatime.org. And, yes, there's pictures of animals to adopt. There's success stories on the website. There's a list of upcoming events. There's information about surrendering your pet, information about fostering. There's a lot of ways you could help this organization. Besides just mailing in a check or finding a lost pet, you know, there's a lot of things people can learn. We're hooked up to Facebook.
Okay. And I believe you have a fundraiser coming. A brief word about that.
Oh, we sure do. And this is a big one. This is Saturday, March 13th at 6 p.m. at Hillcrest Park Lodge. Tickets are $20 each if you buy them ahead of time, or $25 at the door. We really, really want people to come and help support Spot with this. We had a lot of expenses with the puppy mill seizures in the last year. We've also got a lot of feral cat colonies that need help. We have some low-income folks that need help. So all of the earnings from this auction are going to go to support those functions.
So that's a way for our listeners to get involved pretty directly. Yeah. The website, again, is savinganimalsoneatatime.org, and the phone number is 336-5388. I've been talking with Fagan Sanchez, volunteer for SPOT, Saving Pets One at a Time. Fagan, thanks for stopping by.
I'm sure glad you asked me. I really enjoyed the time. Thank you.
This is Dave McConnell signing off for Skagit Talks.
Mm-hmm. Skagit Talks was produced by Joseph C. McGuire and engineered by Jay Charles. Tune in next time for more Skagit Talks.